Maybe she should escape. They escaped the room. But Mrs. Gottlieb, please go ahead. This is much more important.
Okay, so I'll just talk louder. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it. So Donna's mother was a very quiet, refined woman, and family was very important to her. And she always wanted the best for her children. And they lived in the Bronx in an apartment. And when that neighborhood became a neighborhood that wasn't the kind you wanted to live in, right away they moved, because she wanted her family to live in a safe place and bring them up in a place where there were shuls and there was Yiddishkeit all around. And Donna's mother was very quiet, sedate, but you could see the love that she gave her children. And I was just her friend. I only came over to Donna's house, you know, to play, to sleep over, or for Shabbos and this and that. But you could see the warmth and kindness that was displayed by Donna's mother. And Donna's mother was also a first grade teacher for many years. And you needed that kindness in order to teach these kids how to read, how to become people, grown-ups. You know, here they are, these six-year-olds. I think you're six in first grade. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to teach them about school, how to sit all day in class. They just came from kindergarten. They're used to playing. But her mother had the patience, and she also had the knowledge how to teach them their alphabet and how to teach them how to read. And she did that for many, many years. And I just remember that her mother was a very nice woman. And because of her kindness, that extended to Donna. And she was able to raise her family also in kindness and to bring up her children in a house of Yiddishkeit and everything. So you see that the kindness that you do, it gets passed on from generation to generation. And we should try to remember when we're trying to raise our kids that they take us as examples on how they should behave. Yeah. And she was a wonderful woman, and I was happy that I knew her. And I am happy that Donna and I are still friends. And hopefully today's learning will be a zechus for her neshama, and she was a nice person to remember.
Thank you. Okay. That made this immeasurably more meaningful, because I just said we'll learn in the memory of Anita Sharif, but now we have some much greater context, appreciation for that. So, Mrs. Gottlieb, that was greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
I wanted to focus on an aspect of Shabbat HaGadol that is something that has always intrigued me. It was a unique feature of what we call Pesach Mitzrayim. There were some crucial differences between Korban Pesach, the way that it was observed that first year in Mitzrayim, when there really wasn't a seven-day holiday to speak about that we have called the Chag HaMatzot, and what we refer to as Pesach Dorot, Pesach in all generations. And one of those critical differences has to do with what we call Lekichato Be'asor. That is to say, we read this past Shabbat that the Korban Pesach had to have been taken on the 10th of the month. Dabru el Kladat Yisrael v'yamart alehem Be'asor l'chodesh hazeh v'yikhu lahem ish selavet avot Selabayit, that on the 10th day of the month, they're going to take the seh, and it's unclear why, because the Torah then says, V'haya lachem l'mishmeret ad arba'a asar yom, that all you do is you guard it for the next 4 days. In fact, the Ibn Ezra says, V'haya lachem l'mishmeret indicates it has to be with you in your house, and it's simply not clear why. You don't have to do this in Pesach in any other year. You could buy a lamb the morning of the 14th of Erev Pesach, and you slaughter it in the afternoon, Bein Ha'arbayim. So there's absolutely no need to prepare in advance. Now, admittedly, and very fascinating, a topic for further exploration, there is a very important halacha in the Korban Tamid, We have a twice daily sacrifice, etakeves echad taseva boker, v'etakeves hasheni taseb ben ha'arbayim, that it was a twice daily sacrifice of exactly the same animal that was brought for the Korban Pesach, set hamim zachar ben shana. And in fact, this idea of guarding or watching for 4 days is exported from the Korban Pesach to the Korban Tamid. And that's a very important topic, because the idea that we would take this 4 day waiting period, 96 hours, and take it from the Korban Pesach to Korban Tamid, that's, as we like to say in the rabbinic world, Omer Darsheni. What's the connection between Korban Pesach and Korban Tamid? But the example seems to be part of a rubric, because, in fact, as I mentioned just a moment ago, it's the very same type of animal, Set Tamim Zachar Ben Shana. And number three, just to further complicate this and give you some food for thought going forward, we know that there's a general rule that you're never allowed to offer a korban after the Korban Pesach. That's a rule. There's one exception to this year. Anybody want to guess when you're allowed to offer a korban after the korban tamid? That's the last korban that you have to offer every single day. It's like reveille and taps, the tamid shel shachar and the tamid shel bein arbayim. They open the avoda, they close the avoda. So if you had to guess, what would it be? The one day a year where you're allowed to offer a korban following the korban tamid? Gotta guess based on context. Okay, Yom Kippur is a good get. It's actually the korban Pesach, okay? So there's a lot of the things that we actually... That became part and parcel of the Korban Tamid that are actually exported from the Korban Pesach. That's something for us to consider. And one of those that I'd like to limit our discussion to today is this idea of Bikur Dalad Yamim, of having to take the animal 4 days in advance. And the question really is, why is it that we have to take the animal 4 days in advance? So the Chizkuni gives a kind of a logical approach. We know, as is recorded so famously in the Tur in Or HaChaim Siman Taf Lamed, that the reason we call this Shabbat, Shabbat HaGadol, is that it was a miraculous thing on Shabbat, because we believe that historically the Jewish people left on Thursday, which was Tetvav Nisan, so Shabbat was the 10th of the month. So it was actually on Shabbat that this happened, that they took the Egyptian deity, which was a sheep, and the Egyptians said, wait, what are you doing with the sheep? And they said, we're going to slaughter it. And the Egyptians were unable to react. These were their slaves just a little bit beforehand. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says approximately a year beforehand, whatever it was. And the Jews were not subject to any retribution. So the Chizkuni, building off of that idea, says that for the Egyptians to have to hear the screaming of their gods for 4 days, where the sheep are bleeding and squawking in the Jewish homes for 4 days, and be able to do nothing about it, was a measure of justice against the Egyptians, as we say, uvelohehem asashvatim, that God judged not just the Egyptians but their God. So the Chizkuni says it really wasn't for us; it was to torment the Egyptians, and that's a good explanation as to why it would only be relevant during Pesach Mitzrayim and not be relevant for Pesach Dorot, because in every other generation we weren't going to be in Egypt, and in fact, according to the Rambam, we're prohibited from ever going back to Egypt. Ki kasher re'item et Mitzrayim hayom lo tosifu nerotam od ad olam. The Rambam says in three places the Torah warned us against ever returning to Egypt. But I'd like to question the Chizkuni's perspective and develop a different one, which may be alluded to by Rashi. If the Chizkuni is correct, it's a little difficult as to why the pasuk says v'haya lachem lemishmeret. It sounds like it's for us to guard, that there's something about this 4 day process in between taking the sheep and slaughtering it on the 14th, that's not really lahem. It doesn't say v'haya lahem for the Egyptians, but v'haya lachem lemishmeret, that this is, in fact, for you, the Jewish people. So what I'd like to try to develop is an approach that, again, Rashi may have had in mind. I can't entirely be certain of it. And I think actually gets to the heart of the birth of a Jewish nation, and hopefully represents at least a small chiddush, a small advance in terms of the discussion of what were these 4 days, these 96 hours, all about? So Rashi quotes, asks this question: Why was it that the taking of the sheep had to be 4 days prior to the slaughtering of the sheep? And he quotes an answer which doesn't seem to answer the question. He quotes the name of Rav Matya ben Charash, one of the Tanaim. He says, "God," this is based on a pasuk in Yechezkel, "Va'avor alayich ve'ereich." It was time to take you out of Egypt. The problem was, the Jewish people did not have the zechuyot, they did not have the merits through which they would be able to leave the land of Egypt, so he had to give them critical mitzvot. So as we say, b'damayich chayi, that God gave the Jewish people two mitzvot, dam Pesach and dam Milah, the blood of the Brit Milah, because the Pasuk says, kol ha'reel lo yochal bo, that an uncircumcised person cannot eat from the Korban Pesach, so all Jewish males would have to be circumcised. And then in addition to that, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, and through the merit of these two mitzvot, we would be extracted from Egypt. That is essentially the approach that Rashi develops, and that's, on some level, supposed to answer the question, but it doesn't, because if you think about it, it was only about Dam Milah and Dam Pesach, so why do they have to take it 4 days in advance? So what I'd like to suggest, again, this is based on a line later on in Rashi, where he quotes in the Michelta, the Pasuk says, Mishchu k'chulachem tzon mishpechotechem mishachtu ha-pasach. So Rabbi Yosli Aglili says in the Michelta, Mishchu yedeichem me'avodah zarah, withdraw from avodah zarah, ukchu et ha-mitzvot v'idabku b'mitzvot. And Rashi simply quotes that. What I'd like to suggest, essentially, on the basis of what Rashi, again, may have had in mind, I can't be certain, is the following. Korban Pesach was the moment, you could debate this, when do we actually become a nation? Har Sinai, Kriyat Yamsuf. I would like to suggest that it was on the 14th day of the month of Nisan. In fact, there's language in the Torah that suggests that the pasuk that I've been consistently quoting, Vayalacham lemishmeret ad arba asar yom, the Torah uses an expression at that point, after you've waited these 4 days, then the pasuk says, Vishachatu oto kol kahal adat Yisrael ben ha'arbayim. And then the entire congregation of Israel will slaughter the Korban Pesach in the afternoon. It's the only time in the Chumash that expression is ever used. Kahal Adat Yisrael, the congregation of Israel. In fact, the Gemara Pesachim develops on the basis of the triple expression, Kahal Adat Yisrael, the Korban Pesach, was slaughtered in three different groups, Bishalosh Kitos. But the idea to me seems to be the following, that this was a four-day period, perhaps, of giyur, of actual conversion. Now, we know, of course, that Bris Milah is associated indelibly with conversion. No male can convert without having undergone a Brit Milah, and even if somebody who's been medically circumcised beforehand wants to undergo Brit Milah, we have to do something called Hatafat Dam Brit. We have to extract blood. When the Korban Pesach itself functioned, there's something called Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, accepting Mitzvot. Korban Pesach was the mitzvah that a person needed to accept. But if one knows a little bit about the Jewish process of conversion, we don't simply, a prospective convert comes, we don't simply accept that person right away, but we want to make sure that this is not a rash or impulsive decision. We begin to question them. Now, of course, we don't go overboard. The Gemara in Yevamos Mem Zayin says, "Ein bedaktik in olav biyoser." We don't abuse a person, but we want to make sure it's not rash. And I'd like to suggest that this 96-hour period was, in fact, a way of the Jewish people making sure, God ensuring that the Jewish people were fully committed to this process. Sometimes if you tell somebody to do something right away, take it and slaughter it, they say, okay, it's a scary thing to do, the Egyptians will be angry, but it'll be over soon enough. When a child gets a shot, what do you say? It'll be over in a second, don't worry too much about it. But that four-day period, contra the Chizkuni, who said it was to make the Egyptians suffer, I want to suggest the opposite. V'haya lachem lemishmeret. It was a period when the Jewish person had to contemplate, am I with the Egyptians, or am I going to be part of this nascent, inchoate nation called the Jewish people? V'shachtu oto kol kahal adat Yisrael ben arbayim. If you pass through that four-day period, you've joined up with Am Yisrael. And it's no surprise that failing to participate in the mitzvah of Korban Pesach results in karet. It's a defining mitzvah. It's like Brit Milah alone in that way. And I'd like to quote a Michilta to support this argument. The Pasuk says, V'chiyagur itchager v'asa Pesach l'Hashem, that when somebody wishes to come and convert, he should bring a Korban Pesach. So the Michilta actually has a havamina that somebody who wishes to convert as an intrinsic part of his process of conversion must offer a Korban Pesach immediately. And the Mechilta doesn't necessarily reject this supposition. The Mechilta simply says, no, let him wait until when the rest of the Jewish people do it on the 14th day of the month of Nisan. That is to say, the Mechilta already associated the Korban Pesach with the notion of conversion. Let's not forget, as the Rambam details extensively in Hilchos Avodah Zarah Perek Aleph, that the Jews and the Egyptians were functionally equivalent in Egypt. That's why the verse says, O Hanisa Lokim, Lavo Lakachas Lo Goy, Mikarev Goy, that God literally had to extract the Jewish people from within the Egyptian nation. Otherwise, the whole holiday doesn't make sense. What does it mean, Pesach? I skipped over the houses. They were literally living one on top of the other. So the individual Jew had to make a decision. But God wanted to make sure that that decision was a contemplative one, as a deliberate one, as the mission of us says, Hevu Metunim Badin, that we should be very deliberate in our judgment. And just like the process of conversion is, L'dorei Dorot. We don't just allow somebody to walk in and say, well, okay, we'll sign you up today. We're not looking for that. And God was looking for V'hayala Chem L'mishmeret, a four-day process of reflection, of contemplation. Am I really going to go through with it? And if the answer is yes, then the culmination, the apotheosis of that four-day period is to take the Egyptian god, that Avodah Zarah, and to slaughter it. And as the Gemara in Chulin says, Kol HaKofer BeAvodah Zarah Kemoda BeChol HaTorah Kula, that at the very moment that you reject Avodah Zarah, that serves de facto as an acceptance of the entire Torah, which is, of course, the substance of what Giyor requires. The Gemara in Bechoros on Daf Lamed explains that any prospective convert who says, I accept the whole Torah, save one item, that's not a conversion, because we require a full Kabbalat HaMitzvot. Now, what did that mean before Matan Torah? Well, I'd like to suggest that it meant buying into the Korban Pesach. That was the critical mitzvah of that hour. So v'hayala chem l'mishmeret, contra the Chizkuni, it was a four-day period where a Jew was given the opportunity to say, am I really going to go through this? And perhaps that's what Rashi had in mind the whole time. When Rashi says, God wanted to redeem us, but wasn't sure if we really merited redemption. And so he said, take this out 4 days in advance. What did Rashi really mean by that? So I'd like to suggest that what Rashi had in mind is that God says, I want to take you out, but I want to know if you want to be taken out. Do you wish to identify with the Jewish nation in formation, or would you prefer to stay in Egypt? By the way, if we're careful readers of the rest of the Chumash, the Jewish people actually never fully answered that question for themselves, right? How many times did they say, Nitna Rosh v'nashuva Mitzrayim, right? That's a very important theme of the Chumash. But be that as it may, during those 4 days, this is along the lines of Rashi's approach, God says, I'd like to take you out, but do you want to come out? Right? I'm not going to force you to come out. You have to buy into the process, and that's the four-day period of buying into the process. Hopefully that can reframe and maybe even offer a small chidush on what the nature of these 4 days was, a period, just as a prospective convert to this day and age has to go through a period of intense personal reflection and contemplation, and having been involved in many such cases in my other hat career, sometimes people decide, what, it really isn't for them. And we're okay with that now. We're not looking to coerce people, and we're not looking for people to make rash decisions. On the contrary, we want to make sure that there's a contemplative process. So it seems to me that might be the explanation for these mysterious 4 days. Just to conclude, apropos Mrs. Gottlieb's beautiful introductory remarks, we're going to read in the Haftorah this week, in the conclusion of the Haftorah of Shabbat HaGadol, is Hine Anochi Sholeach Lachem Et Eliyahu Hanavi'i Lifnei Bo Yom Hashem HaGadol V'Hanora, that God, this is the end of the period of prophecy. The last of the prophets was Malachi. We read the end of Malachi. So God says, stay tuned. Don't worry. I'm signing off for now, a la Mark Watney, right? Signing off for now, but I'll, be back. For those who read The Martian, or Book Day tomorrow, you still have time. So in any event, God says, but don't worry, I'll be back, just, keep the faith. So the pasuk right before that, the penultimate pasuk of the Haftorah is, V'heshiv lev avot al banim, v'lev banim al avotam, that the sign of the coming of the Messianic era will be a kind of emerging of the hearts between parents and children. And as such, you know, Mrs. Gottlieb was mentioning before, the patience that Mrs. Anita Scharf used to demonstrate with the first graders, making sure that they learned the basic skills that they would need, of course, to advance. And if you think about what Donna is doing here every day, very much along the same lines, Veheshiv Levavot Abanim, or in this case, Al Banot, Velev Banot Al Imotam, that we can see the many ways that she has internalized the life's work of her mother to ensure that those students who would otherwise, in all candor, do without very basic life skills are remediated to the point where, God willing, they'll be able to not just be functional, but be successful. So not a more appropriate time to remember Mrs. Anita Scharf and the clear and direct, demonstrable impact that she had on her daughter's direction in life. So may her neshama have an aliyah.
Amen.
Okay, so